is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. James Risen is a two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, the author of a terrific book called State of War and several other books, and has a brand new one called Pay Any Price, Greed, Power, and Endless War. I should also say that James Risen has been the subject of an attempt by the United States Department of Justice to get him to reveal sources, particularly regarding a story he wrote and things that he wrote about in State of War, his previous book, regarding the CIA and their warrantless wiretapping. And there were reports recently that perhaps they were coming to a settlement. So let's talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the book, Jim. Welcome to the Big 550 KTRS.
Thanks for having me.
There was a story last week that Eric Holder, the outgoing Attorney General of the United States, was hinting that the DOJ was near a resolution with you over these questions of the sources and whether you would come forward and reveal who had told you what you reported about not just the warrantless wiretapping, but other things. Is that true? Are you near a resolution with the DOJ?
No, it's not true. I don't know what he was talking about, frankly.
This has been going on?
No deal.
This has been going on for how many years now?
Seven, I think. I kind of lost track. It's been so long.
Yeah. It cost you a
lot.
I
got subpoenaed first in 2008.
2008. So we're in the seventh year of this going after you. Has it deterred you from doing what you do for a living?
Well, for the first couple of years, it kind of had an effect on me, I think. But I've kind of gotten used to it. And now, you know, my real answer to the whole thing is to write another book. I decided that if I kept writing and keep investigating and looking for and uncovering domestic abuses of power, that was my best answer to the government.
Absolutely. And you keep uncovering them, and you do a great job of it in the new book. Again, it's called Pay Any Price, Greed, Power, and Endless War. It does seem to a lot of Americans, myself included, that for the last 13 years, we have been in a nonstop war. Even when it's not on the front pages, even when it's not on our TV screens, we're still paying for it with tremendously large numbers, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, basically what happened in my the way I kind of frame it in the book is that if you remember, Dick Cheney famously said, you know, the gloves come off. And what that really meant was that we were deregulating national security, because by saying the gloves come off, that meant we were getting rid of all the old rules that governed national security. And we were going to let the national security apparatus grow without much oversight and without many rules governing what they could do. And at the same time, we poured hundreds of billions of dollars into national security. And so it was growing without any rules, very little oversight, with massive new amounts of money. And that's a recipe for disaster. I kind of compare it to the banking crisis. We've had kind of a national security crisis. Remember, in the banking crisis, we deregulated banking, and then we poured hundreds of billions of dollars into it in new subprime mortgages. I think something similar happened with national security. It's just that nobody has stepped back and looked at it that way.
And in both cases, there hasn't been all that much accountability.
Right, yeah. We never put any Wall Street officials in jail. And Barack Obama decided, you know, he wasn't going to look back. He was going to look forward. That was his phrase. So there was never any investigations into what happened. And now the government continues to crack down on leaks and whistleblowers just to make sure nobody ever really knows what's going on in the war on terror.
Yeah, this administration has cracked down on more whistleblowers than any other in history.
Right.
But I know.
And all previous administrations combined.
Wow.
More than, you know.
I know one of the basic rules of journalism is follow the money. But the problem,
right.
The problem with our endless war is you can't find the money, can you?
Right. Right. Well, that's in the first chapter in my book. It's an amazing story that I just couldn't believe, where it turned out that at the beginning of the war in Iraq, the United States airlifted cash to Iraq, billions and billions of dollars in cash to Iraq on C-17s. And then when it arrived, it disappeared. And a trace, you know, I think there was between $12 and $14 billion in $100 bills airlifted to Iraq. From the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. and the money had been trucked from there to Andrews Air Force Base, and then from there to Baghdad International Airport, and then it was convoyed from Baghdad International to the Green Zone or to the Iraqi Central Bank, and then it disappeared, and nobody knew what happened, and I finally was able to trace it to about $2 billion. This now, I found out, is sitting in a bunker in Lebanon where some powerful Iraqis had stolen the money after it arrived in Baghdad, and it was being hidden in Lebanon for safekeeping for the people who stole it.
And when we're talking about $100 bills here, we're not talking about somebody had a backpack and stuffed as much money in there as they possibly could.
This is billions of dollars.
On pallets.
Bills on pallets.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It really is. And, you know, I think I say, I have a line in the book, I say, you know, it's hard to believe that somebody thought this was a good idea at the time.
Yeah. And I just want to point out again, Jim said $2 billion was stolen and put into...
As far as I know, it's the largest robbery in modern history.
Why is this not a bigger story? I know you're reporting it, but you're the only one who's talking about this.
Great question. It's you know, why doesn't anybody care about how much money we have spent? Not just this. You know, the United States, I think, taxpayer money has spent about $64 billion on reconstruction in Iraq, in addition to all the money we spent on military operations, and not counting at all the human costs and casualties of our troops.
Right.
And, you know, there's just very little accounting for what happened, or, you know, it's just kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, this should anger us because it's our money. This is American taxpayer money. And the money we're talking about here, that $20 billion, that doesn't even come close to the amount of money that we have paid to private contractors. You write about this in the book as well. You say that there was a study done by the Pentagon 3 years ago that found in the 10 years after 9/11, the Defense Department gave more than $400 billion to contractors. And that's not just all the money that went to contractors. This is $400 billion that went to contractors who had already gotten in trouble with the Pentagon for fraud.
Yeah. It's like it didn't matter whether you had been found to be conducting fraudulent activities. You kept getting more contracts. It's just there was no punishment for having, you know, engaged in fraudulent activity.
Who is supposed to be overseeing all of this?
Well, that's what I said, you know, that we deregulated things and we just allowed everybody to do whatever they wanted and the gloves come off, that means nobody's really watching. And there are no real rules. You can kind of get away with whatever you feel like. That's the real unintended consequence of Dick Cheney's line, the gloves come off.
Yeah.
It means, hey, you know, here's a gold rush going on. Let's cash in. And everybody, a lot of hustlers and con men realized all you got to do is call yourself a counterterrorism expert, go to Washington, and that's the way to get rich.
But what they really are war profiteers.
Right, right. And nobody, one of the sad things is nobody in Washington, in Congress, wants to do serious oversight of the war on terror because they're afraid of being called soft on terrors. That's the easiest thing to say to label your opponent. Oh, you're soft on terror. Why are you asking questions about the war on terror?
Right, right. When, in fact, it's supposed to be your job to be looking after the American people's taxpayer dollars and where they're going, and you could probably phrase yourself in heroic terms and frame yourself that way to the public if you were the one who cracked down and found this stuff out, or after hearing about what you've reported in your book, said, you know what, let's have a House Select Subcommittee on this.
Right. Yeah, but, you know, it's really sad. I think one of the problems is, and this is something that I want to do more reporting on in the future, I think a lot of people, a lot of generals, a lot of congressmen, a lot of congressional staffers, a lot of people in the executive branch, they're all looking for their next job, and their next job is going to be at a contractor, a defense contractor, an intelligence contractor, or some other contractor. That's how they cash in after government service. And so they don't want to criticize this system. They don't want to criticize the contractors. Because if you criticize the contractors, you're not going to get a job with a contractor after you leave government service.
You know, in his final speech, President Eisenhower talked about and warned about the military-industrial complex. In your book, you refer to the Homeland Security Complex, and you say that these big war profiteers are almost like those Wall Street banks in that they are too big to fail. Have there even been efforts to curtail some of this fraud and to chop the legs out from any of these people?
No, I mean, I have this chapter called Too Big to Fail, which is about KBR, which is this big Texas-based company that used to be part of Halliburton. And it's the company that provided all the basic services for U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Basically all housing, food, housing, you know, any other basic service you can imagine for living in Iraq was provided to the Army by KBR. And there are lots of investigations of and questions and criticisms of KBR's activities, and some of those activities, you know, harmed lots of American troops, allegedly. But KBR kept getting work because the U.S. Army knew that they needed a company like KBR because they didn't have enough troops to perform all the basic services for their own operations.
Right.
And there was a great congressional hearing where one guy who was testifying just threw up his hands and said, "I guess KBR is too big to fail." And so that line really resonated with me, and I realized, you know, too big to fail is not just about banks; it's also about the war on terror.
And the part that makes it worse is that many of these contractors, and many of their supporters, and many of their paid members of Congress, because that's what happens here. There's money passing back and forth in that corrupt building known as the United States Capitol and in their offices nearby. Too many of them make speeches about how, oh, we need to fix the welfare state in this country, and they don't realize the irony of the fact that they're getting government money for not doing anything.
Exactly. Yeah, one of the guys I write about, Blue Brothers, who are they founded the company that makes the Predator drone and the Reaper drones. You know, their government contracts, I think, grew by tenfold in the war on terror. And one of them still writes columns attacking the government's welfare subsidies. So there's, you know, a lot of hypocrisy going on.
Yeah, well, that's because they don't see corporate welfare as a bad thing.
One other
story I'd like you to share, and we can go in depth on this one a little bit, is the story of a guy by the name of Dennis Montgomery.
Yeah.
Tell my audience about him.
He's one of my favorite stories of the whole war on terror. Dennis Montgomery was a computer software expert, supposed expert, who in 2003 convinced the CIA that he had secret technology that would allow him to detect Al-Qaeda codes hidden in Al Jazeera news broadcasts.
Mm-hmm.
That only he could see. And that he had this secret technology to read hidden messages inside videotape, hidden objects. And so he began to tell the CIA that he was seeing numbers and letters that no one else could see hidden in the banner on Al Jazeera videotape. And the CIA took him so seriously that they got President Bush at Christmas 2003 to ground international flights that they thought corresponded with these numbers and letters that were coming into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only after French intelligence demanded to know where this information was coming from that they realized this was all a hoax and a fabrication. And that Montgomery, who had a big gambler. He liked to play cards at casinos in Reno and Las Vegas. And that they realized this was all a hoax. They covered the whole thing up, and they they didn't do anything about it.
Now, when you say, well, let me just stop you there.
More government contracts.
Let me just stop you right there for a second, Jim. When you say they covered this up, who is they that covered this up?
They didn't tell anybody about this at all for years. And then after the CIA realized the French intelligence service was mad because flights from Paris were being grounded, so they wanted to know where the CIA was getting this information. And so the CIA finally told them, and they had a French company check it out, and they said, this is not real. This is a hoax. And finally the CIA accepted the fact that it was a hoax, and they just covered the whole thing up after that. They didn't hold anybody accountable for anything. They just stopped dealing with Montgomery, but then they didn't tell anybody else in the government that they had a problem with him, and he kept getting contracts with the Pentagon.
Oh! This was under George Tenet?
Yes, it was.
Wow.
And he actually continued to get contracts until the early Obama administration.
You know what this reminds me of? There was a guy by the name of Jim McCormick in England who made these things that were essentially nothing more than these golf ball finders that you can buy in a pro shop on any golf course in America, which isn't really much of anything at all. It's just plastic with some wires inside. And he convinced many governments, including the government of Iraq, that they were bomb detectors.
Right, yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah, that's a very good analogy.
He called them the ADE-651 and sold them to 20 countries in the Middle East, including Iraq and Afghanistan. Many of those for our dollars, those dollars you were talking about that we sent over there. He was selling these things, which cost about $3 in parts, for $60,000 each.
Right.
And the Iraqi government still has these and still uses them, even though he's been convicted on 3 counts of fraud and is doing 10 years in jail. These fraudsters come along and they see those pallets full of money and their eyes just get wide and they think, well, I got to get a piece of that. And Dennis Montgomery fits right in with that.
Yeah, yeah. There was another great story. Now that you mentioned, there was another one. Another one of my favorites is this kids in Miami Beach who somehow got an army contract to provide all the small arms to the Afghan army. They were just like teenagers from Miami Beach. I mean, it goes on and on. It's just the craziness of the war on terror. That's one of the phrases I use in the book, is that crazy became the new normal in the war on terror.
Yeah, and continues now because nobody wants to be seen as weak on terrorism, as you pointed out.
That's the perfect line to shut down oversight.
Yep. Wow. The book is called Pay Any Price, Greed, Power, and Endless War by James Risen, investigative journalist for the New York Times and 2-time Pulitzer Prize winner. Keep up the good work. You're doing great stuff here, and nobody else is getting these stories, and I'm glad you are.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jim. Pleasure talking to you.